Did you guys see Kevin Love's three-point celebration?
No.
Like when he makes
what
a three-pointer? It essentially looks like he's holding a cigarette and putting out the ashes with the three fingers like this. Oh. It looks like or something like that. And I'd like to get to the bottom of that. That if I do a Cleveland Cavaliers in the playoffs game, that's why I hope they make it. I would like to that to be my first report is what the hell does that mean, Kevin Love? What is the origin of that? And please give me as many details as possible. Hey, guys.
Beautiful.
Welcome to Debatable. I'm Clinton Yates. That's Izzy Gutierrez. His fingers are working today. That's Bill Barnwell. And we've got, this is really funny. It's like this one, but you wave them at the same time. Hi, guys. So, okay. We've got quite a few things to get to today, but I just want everybody to know that this is Izzy's wheelhouse, which is fake playoff basketball. So throughout the course of this show, he's going to try to convince me why this was the greatest thing to happen of all time. Because for the record, I'm out on the play-in in general.
Oh, well, just to start, I'll let you know that initially I wasn't all in on the play-in, but it's here. Play. What are we going to do? Let's have fun with it. That's my first argument.
Okay.
All right.
Our first topic, we're going to talk about the second play-in game. Mm-hmm. Where the T-Wolves beat the Clippers. And the Clippers choked down the stretch, but they kind of been let off the hook for that because of the T-Wolves celebration. And our question, did you find the T-Wolves celebration cringeworthy or charming?
Who wants to go first? We'll let Bill go first because Izzy has already pointed out that he is in the tank for everything that happens in the plan. I'm joking. I'll stop.
I don't understand why this is a real thing. Like, I'm almost so confused as to why it's a real thing that I feel like it's not actually a real thing. Now, Clinton, let me ask you a question.
Yes.
Last year, during the wild card game between the Red Sox and the Yankees, which is basically the MLB equivalent of the play-in game for the NBA, the Red Sox won.
Sure.
And they had, did they not have an enormous champagne-laden celebration in the locker room for winning the wild card game?
They did, like, but like, this is what happens.
It's the same energy.
Yeah, very same energy.
It's way more energy, I think, personally. Let's see the clip of what the Timberwolves did after they won, because it seems like it wasn't anywhere near significant as a champagne celebration to me.
Okay, so the game is decided at this point. Yes. Pat Beverly is in full five-star general of the hands community mode, letting everybody.
Shout out to TNT cameraman knowing exactly where to go as soon as the game is over.
Mm-hmm. Great pop time on him. So we like that. He measures out well from a scouting standpoint. Look at this. Now they're on the table. This is where things get crazy.
Yeah.
Like, you're on the table. Mm-hmm. There's injury risk involved. People are taking off jerseys.
He nearly
falls over. I'm joking about the injury thing. We've seen this a fair amount of times in the NBA.
No, don't joke. John, like, Wall, Dwayne Wade nearly hurt Dwayne himself Wade, trying to recreate exactly. this. Like, when in his final year.
Brought up the heat culture within 3 minutes.
And now the full tears come, and Pat Beverly is emotional. I listen, as somebody that has played Pat Beverly for Halloween on TV, and he was once one of my favorite players in the league, if not my favorite player in the league, I love seeing the resurgence of Pat Bev. He's my kind of guy, talks a lot of trash, makes a lot of ridiculous proclamations, and when he ends up winning, he's going to let you know that he told you that. This is kind of how I run my offense myself. Izzy, what did you think about this overall situation?
You know, so first of all, when I turned off the TV right when the game ended, so I didn't see a whole lot of this until afterward.
Wow.
I didn't see it live at the moment, which kind of took away a little bit of sort of the embarrassment of it. Because, like, I look at it, I think back, and I'm like, it was a Tuesday in Minneapolis, and it was lit. Like, how often does that happen? Like, there was a woman who glued herself to the floor. Like, a woman who glued herself to the floor in this game. A-Rod was there with the very girlfriend who was, like, agreeing with him at all times. Just a very, like, live atmosphere, okay? An amazing atmosphere. And, you know, Pat Beverly sort of leading the way. Like, if it would have been anybody else, any other point guard there other than him, it would have been sort of, oh, yeah, let's celebrate. But Karl-Anthony Towns, your leader, had fouled out, and he was sort of mopey and probably wouldn't. It wouldn't have been nearly as celebratory if it wasn't for Patrick Beverly. And, like, so say what you will about, you know, that being mockable. But he also brought the energy, because there was a time where it looked like the Clippers were just going to sort of suck the energy out of the T-Wolves, and all of a sudden, hey, your young little team's going to have to go play for the 8 seed. But then they kept bringing it, and it was in large part because of him. Even that one three-pointer that he hit that eventually got taken away, like, that was some highlight, you know, real stuff right there for his career, if it would have counted. And so, yeah, I don't really give them that hard of a time. Like, they know they're not going to celebrate much more this postseason, right? So just go ahead and get your victories in there while you can. And to also have done that without Karl Anthony Towns effectively, right? Because he was just a bleep show in this game. To do that without him and feel yourself like, okay, go ahead, go for it. Because, you know, there's not many Tuesdays in Minneapolis that are going to feel like this.
Okay, so two things. Number one. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Bill. Go ahead.
No. I was going to say, on top of that point, like, you know, that classic thing of like, oh, act like you've been there before. Outside of Pat Beverly, these guys have not been there before. Karl Anthony Towns has played one playoff series, I think, in 7 years. Same thing for D'Angelo Russell. Jared Vanderbilt played 5 minutes for Portland, I believe, earlier in his career. Like, these are not guys who have been there on a regular basis. So let them celebrate. This is their moment to, like, announce, hey, we actually have arrived. We may not get much further than this, like Izzy was saying, but at least we're here. And then for Pat Beverly, the guy who's been, like, basically tossed around like a, you know, like a coupon book this year for teams trying to save money, like, I can understand why they would feel that way.
Okay, so there's
Clinton,
two things.
Clinton, Alabaster, you talk about the play-in. Yes. Sorry, you talk about the play-in tournament and the desire. Go ahead.
No, so there's two things. Number one is very simple. If you're going to tell me that this play-in format is something that I'm supposed to like, you better love this kind of celebration every single time somebody wins the game. You can't have it both ways and say, oh, look at us presenting this new fun option. And then when guys go nuts because they actually win, you say, ha-ha, you should act like you've been there. No, that doesn't work like that. You're trying to recreate that NCAA tournament-style feel where one and done means you're done. Of course, that's not really the case, which makes it extra awkward, which gets back to my point about why I don't need this anyway. But more importantly, and Alabaster, help me out on this. Can you put back up the slide that has Pat Beverly's quote from what he said about the Clippers? Because some of y'all don't know this about Pat Beverly. So the podcast listeners, Patrick Beverly after the game. Take they bleep home. Long flight to L.A. Take they bleep home. It's deeper than that for me. I gave my blood, sweat, and tears to that organization. Let me get serious for a minute here, and not that serious. People tend to forget because Patrick Beverly is a super loud
mouth. Like a seven?
so like a seven level of serious. People, okay. He's a super loud mouth who gets in people's faces and says a lot of stuff. Patrick Beverly's basketball life is legitimately one of the most intriguing in the world. After Arkansas, he ends up in Europe, in the Ukraine, not even a joke, was an all-star there, wins a dunk contest there, makes it back to the pros, is a bit of a journeyman, then gets a big contract. His basketball life is one where I can understand the emotion that comes out after beating his former team. This was his Super Bowl, not even close. This was a Pat, my buddy texted me, and he said, Pat Bev legacy game, which is kind of a joke. But, like, when you think about his career, this is what this guy kind of embodies. And the fact that he's been able to bond with those younger guys on the Timberwolves, I thought that was pretty cool. And once again, be careful what you ask for, NBA, because you're going to get things like this when you're setting up random extra games.
That's exactly what I was going to say. So you go from, like, hey, questioning the playoffs this year, the play-in, rather, because, oh, last year it was Steph and LeBron. You had everything set. This year, not as good. Look at the footage that you got for next year's promotion. You got dude crying on the sideline after winning one. And here's the other thing. Like, the people that are in there 1 through 6, all happy-go-lucky, look at us. We've worked our way and saved our spot. Like, they knew they were going to have that. They knew they weren't going to have a one-and-done situation. Not that this was one-and-done for these guys, but they knew they were going to have that, and they were comfortable with it. All that joy was sort of spread out over the course of the season. These teams worked to make the playoffs, but it comes down to this. Like, this is sort of all 82 games into one, and so, yeah, they're going to be like, wow, now all that stuff that I worked for, I couldn't really appreciate it, then now I have to appreciate it all at once. And so I do give them some slack for some of the celebration.
Charlie, what's up?
So let's also hear from Patrick Beverly after the game. We have a clip of him from Instagram Live in the locker room, and it was just more of the full Pat Beverly experience that I think the audience can enjoy.
Yeah, what I say in the beginning of the year, what I say?
Hey, we're going playoffs.
Hey, check that goal off now, folks. So, yeah. Check that goal off now.
Bad boys.
I told you he's going to playoffs. Nobody believe me. Weak-ass Clippers. Beat that
out of here.
And that real matched the game with Carl Anthony Towns cameo appearance, just like he did in the game there. It was perfect.
See, this is what we were trying to avoid. But no, that's real emotion, man.
It's so much fun.
I remember during the pandemic that Pat Bev played in a basketball tournament, and he basically talked like that the entire time while he was on the court with his opponent. It was great. Yeah. Like a video game. I didn't mean football. Or was it basketball? I can't remember, but it was tight.
Well, the thing about Pat Beverly, what he does, like, is doing right now is taking away a little bit of the shine off of Anthony Edwards, who I think America is going to fall in love with if they haven't already. Like, most of the time, to this point, you would have to, like, watch the post-game interviews or watch some T-Wolves games to really know him. Now, against Ja Morant, who I think he could possibly outperform, because this is one of those things where you look like and you realize that, when it's playoff pressure, I'm the best option on this team. When it's playoff type of defense, ahead of D'Angelo Russell, who can be streaky but isn't the most explosive athlete, ahead of Karl Anthony Towns, who, you know, pump fake and two dribbles to the rim isn't like the go-to move, right, in the playoffs. And so he's going to have a lot more responsibility. And if he's feeling himself or if his shot's going in, he's going to have some explosive games. I don't think Ja has to do that necessarily for his team. So I think he might outperform them. And, like, he's just gotten to the point – well, first of all, he's gotten to the point where he's the first Anthony Edwards I think of when I hear that name. Mm-hmm. And it took a while to get there. But now he's the point where he does that. But, yeah, I just think he's an absolute sort of budding star. And this is where it's going to be like, oh, okay, you want me to handle this? Cool, I got this. No problem at all. And so that's why I think people are going to fall in love with him even further.
Can I posit a alternate theory here for what Patrick Beverly is doing, which makes him an even better teammate than I think we're giving him credit for here, which is – Carl Anthony Towns, as Izzy has alluded to multiple times during this segment, laid an egg last night. He maybe his worst game of the season, possibly. I mean, they were down 90-83 when he fouled out of the game on a terrible foul, and they went on a huge run at the end of the game to win. They outscored the Clippers by 19 points when Carl Anthony Towns was not on the floor last night. Now, we know Carl Anthony Towns is not going to play that bad game in, game out, but this was a game where Carl Anthony Towns was basically shouldering the load, wanting to be the guy in a nationally televised game, win and get in game, and did too much and had a terrible performance. And Patrick Beverly is taking all of the attention off of that bad game by being basically like Patrick Beverly turned up to 11. And I feel like that's something that, you know, a role player needs to do when their star player has a bad game. I feel like we should be giving Patrick Beverly more credit for taking the pressure off of the most important player on that team.
Yeah,
I wanted to bring up a point going back to Anthony Edwards. Sorry about that. I wanted to go back to something from the draft when Anthony Edwards got drafted, and it was a point that Bomani made, because, like, I was pretty down on Anthony Edwards. Like, I'd watched him play at Georgia a few times, and I was like, this guy, like, looks lost out there, just bored, like, not paying attention. It's like, that's not the type of guy I want to bring into my franchise and trust as 19 years old that, you know, hey, eventually the keys are going to be yours. And Bomani said, you know, it could be that he lacks focus, or it could be that he's just bored because the level, like, of competition around him doesn't match who he is. And, like, some people take advantage of that and score 50 a game, and some people are just like, eh, I know I can do that whenever I need to. That's what it feels like. It feels like Bo was right. Shocking. And that now, like, the better the competition gets, the more focused he is, the more he recognizes, oh, not only can I do this, but they need me to do this. Like, I think, you know, it reminds me of sort of a Dwayne Wade coming up, you know, his first year with the Heat, and, you know, had Lamar Odom, had Caron Butler out there, but, like, by the end, it was like, oh, wow, he's our best option. And so, like, what? You think comparing Anthony Edwards with Dwayne Wade is some crazy...
No.
He's 20
years
old.
I'm saying that your long-tail propaganda game to find a way to get Ant to Miami is something...
To talk about the Utah Jazz owner? To talk about the former Chicago Bull and Marquette alum? Like, come on. This guy's an NBA legend. This is not Heat talk. This is not what that is. Come on. Who else? What other young two guard do you want me to compare him to?
We'll let you have it.
Yeah?
Go for it. What's up,
Charlie? Let me just bolster your points for a second. And Izzy, to your point about the value of Anthony Edwards in the postseason over the last couple years, I'm actually going to give the Heat a little bit of credit here, but we saw a player in Tyler Hero who was a create-your-own-shot guard excel in the postseason when it slowed down. We saw Donovan Mitchell and Jamal Murray do that. We saw Ja Morant do that in the first round against the Jazz. The playoffs are sort of built for these guys who have enough touch to shoot the ball. and are freak athletes and get to the rim at will, and are isolation scorers. So it makes sense that he shined. And then to your other point about piling on Karl-Anthony Towns, Bill, this actually might not be the worst playoff game that he's played. He's had one playoff series before in his career. He played in five games. Over the course of those five games, his plus-minus was minus 43. He averaged 15 points a game. He had three of those games where he shot under 40% from the field.
And you wonder why Jimmy Butler wanted out.
Couldn't resist it.
Could see the moving in Izzy's head, like, do I get it in now? And you had to get it in now.
That was a culture grenade. The Dwayne Wade one was not.
No, at least you're honest. I wonder, like, is this a thing where the Timberwolves, even if they're not better without Karl-Anthony Towns during the regular season, in this big moment, like, are they going to be better with Karl-Anthony Towns at least not playing the same role he plays on a game-in, game-out basis during the regular season? I don't know. I feel like there's enough around him that maybe having some balance is good.
Look, he needs to just chill. Like, that's if fair. I'm his coach, I'm just like, relax, man. Like, if you've got a smaller four-man on you, like, let's let the offense run. You pin him in the post. We'll get to the ball. You'll probably get fouled, okay? If you got a big man on you, just chill out there. Relax. You can be able to drive by him on, you know, the drive and kick, and you just drive past him. But you're doing way too much. Like, I would just go back and show him some regular season games where he could just stand there, catch, and shoot, and just recognize that, hey, you've got other players here. It's not all on you. I know this feels like your moment. The play-in feels like your moment. It's not. Just relax, and your numbers will come. Because the rebounds are going to be there. You know, he's going to draw some fouls. Just don't work so hard offensively. Like, you're forcing it, and it's creating disasters. Like, that one where I think it was his fifth foul, there was, like, three fouls that he got in that one possession, and they were trying not to call it until the last one that he finally committed. So it's just like, he just needs to calm down, let it all come, you know, more casually to him. And that's kind of, if you look at his last playoff series, his last couple of games weren't, like, spectacular games, but at least more efficient. He seemed to calm down a little bit. Hopefully that happens in this series.
As largely Karl-Anthony Towns has had one of the toughest 2 years in the NBA, so we wish the young man well in terms of focus and everything he's trying to do with that team. Quickly, though, want to give a quick shout-out to Ford Madison. You really can't help the Ukraine relief efforts. They're selling jerseys if you want to check that out. They're online, so do that. That wasn't just a plug. I actually happened to correlate.
Shout-out. All right, we're gonna pivot to the other play-in game where the Nets.
Ooh, yeah. Playing stove, is he?
Yeah, but we got Kevin Durant being, you know, the god, maybe the best player in the world, and we got Kyrie Irving hitting his first 12 shots and carrying the Nets to a victory over more feisty than we thought, Cavs team. And our question, are you convinced that the Nets can sustain their level of play from last night against the Celtics?
I had to pull up this box score to actually answer this question because it's really hard to sustain 12 for 12 to start off for Kyrie Irving. Like, that's pretty tough. Then it's not like he's hitting wide open shots over here. Like, the one that he hit to end the half was just fading to the right at the buzzer.
Baseline, yeah.
Ridiculous. Yeah. And so, you know, Kevin Durant, like, Matt, 9 for 16, not spectacular game for him. But Andre Drummond played a little bit out of his mind there. Granted, it was good setups from
stomping on the logo
from Kyrie a lot of the
time. Kyrie stomping on the tiny logo. Yeah,
this wasn't a type of convincing win that you like. Right. It felt like from the beginning. Like, it felt like at the beginning you said, "Oh wow, this team can do." And then you're just like, "Oh yeah, this team could also lose to anybody because this Cleveland team can come back without Jared Allen and make this a game." And so, and if Kyrie wasn't perfect for three quarters of this game, what would have happened there? So, not convinced that this is a team that's going to get out of the first round against Boston.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. This was like a dream game if you're the Nets. You shoot almost 54% from the field. Obviously, Kyrie started off phenomenally in this game. They had 34 points, I believe, from Andre Drummond and Bruce Brown. So you're getting a lot of points from your secondary players. And you're doing this against a Cavs team that didn't have Jared Allen, but obviously doesn't have Colin Sexton. Like, they even pointed this out during the broadcast, like, they needed nearly perfect games from their stars just to beat the Cavs by a few points at home. And now they're playing the Celtics, who I believe, are number one in the NBA in terms of field goal percentage and three-point percentage allowed. Like, if your formula is going to be, okay, Kyrie's going to go 12 for 12, we're going to shoot the lights out, you're playing the worst possible team in the NBA to do that against. That's my concern about this formula being sustainable for them against the Celtics in the next round.
I'm just not buying that, because the Celtics are, first of all, hobbled a little bit defensively, but also, sure, like, yeah, that's the game plan for the Nets. Put the ball in the hole. What else were we expecting them to be doing?
Of course.
The application from a one-game situation in the play-in to an actual series in the first round doesn't beget the need to be that hot in one or singular every single game. I think it's a different strategy in terms of the calculus there. I'm like, yeah, we can't sit here and say, oh, look at the Nets. I wonder how they're going to put it together. Oh, that's right. They're going to have two of the best shooters make lights out performances, and that's pretty much how they're going to work. And then it happens. They're like, oh, that's not going to work for the rest of the time. Well, what else do they have? I mean, that's the whole point.
You also saw for like a quarter.
No, that's fair.
You also saw for like a quarter and a half that if they, you know, blitz Kevin Durant, try to take him out of there, you're talking about Bruce Brown creating what's essentially on a 3-on-2, because I don't think they were leaving Kyrie either. And it's just like, all right, that's where you want your postseason to come down to? Bruce Brown, like, deciding, hey, where's the score going to go, and being the Draymond Green of your group? Like, they, you saw some weak spots there. And when it comes to the Celtics, yes, having Robert Williams out, huge loss to their defense as a whole. But Marcus Smart could be Defensive Player of the Year. And maybe the worst possible individual matchup for Kyrie Irving is a motivated Marcus Smart in this series. Like, absolutely just wants nothing more than to obviously win, but to make Kyrie Irving's life absolutely miserable. So I think you're going to need Kevin Durant to be otherworldly, like 40 points a game type of guy. And Kyrie's probably not going to be nearly as efficient in this series. And the Celtics, yes, they don't have their center, but they're feeling themselves defensively. Like, they've been playing pretty well even without him defensively. And so on a perimeter-based team like the Nets, it's going to be pretty difficult to get past Boston.
I'm not saying that they need to have another way to win. This is the way they are built to win. I agree. But I'm just saying this is a bad matchup for them, independent of what we saw in this play-in game. Like, this is just not the team they want to go up against.
That could be true. But, I mean, in a situation in which two guys like that are hot and feeling themselves, I'm pretty much going to say, yeah, I'll bet on that trend for a little bit. I mean, okay, we'll do this thing. If they win game one, do they win the series, the Nets? Is he?
No. No.
One of those deals?
Because I think it's a little bit too volatile, that defense. Like, if you're asking me which team can give the other superstar a more difficult time, and I'm going to go Kevin Durant over Kyrie here, can give the other team more I think the Boston Celtics can give Kevin Durant a more difficult time with their blitzes and with their defensive strategies than vice versa to Jason Tatum. I think Jason Tatum can have like a couple of 50 burgers in this series because that Nets defense is, you know, can be attacked.
Yeah.
Okay. We saw him go for 54 a month ago, right, against the Nets with Kyrie and KD on the court. Now, granted, the Nets have a guy who would be very handy to roll out and put against Jason Tatum in this series. But we don't know if he's going to show up.
Those reports are as confusing to understand, like, what's real and what's not, as some of the, like, war reports. Because it's like, one day you hear he's not even running, and the next day you hear Ben feels great about his, you know, comeback ability. I'm just like, what are you talking? How can you feel great if you weren't running? Were you running? Was that a lie? Like, I don't even want to talk about Ben Simmons until he is on the NBA court wearing something that is not made of lamb.
Alabaster wants you to know that according to NBA insider Brandon Scoop B. Robinson, shout out to Scoop, Ben Simmons' confidence is at, quote, an all-time high, and he, quote, walks around like he's Michael Jordan. I'm guessing that's a reference to him wearing oversized baggy jeans and terribly fitting tops.
I was gonna say, maybe that's
probably
what it
more
is.
Of what, oh, no, that's not it? Okay,
he just hit $200,000 at the blackjack table. It's the only thing I can think of that would make him as confident. Right. In that scenario, and good for him if he pulled
Michael
that
Jordan
off,
at what age? Because if he's limping around like a 50-year-old Michael Jordan, that makes a lot more sense.
Oh no!
What's next?
I mean, like, you know, I let me say one more thing. Like, is there any way for the Nets to stop Jason Tatum if they don't have Ben Simmons for this entire series?
I mean, like, not stop him. No, I mean, I think Kevin Durant can definitely take on the challenge. I think he likes that idea of just showing off the defensive chops a little bit. But I don't think any one player is going to stop him anyway. So I think over the course of the game, if anybody else is doing well, if Jaylen Brown's requiring some attention, then, you know, I just don't think it's going to be possible for them to really do what's required to stop Jason Tatum as a team.
And that's, yeah, and that's not necessarily the game plan either, is what I would say. Alabaster, what's up?
Got a bit of a digression, but that Scoops Robinson quote made me think of it. Do you guys think that current Michael Jordan could beat Ben Simmons in one-on-one?
Oh my God. I refuse to have any conversations about one-on-one basketball. One-on-one basketball is the most ridiculously useless thing in the entire context of all the sports. I don't care who can beat anybody one-on-one, because one-on-one is not basketball. That's just me.
Oh, I care. Let me be clear. I care. What are the rules, Charlie? What is it?
Just here we go.
To 11, 21.
Make it take it to 11.
Make it take it to 11. Standard rules.
Standard. I didn't realize there were standard.
Standard rules. So if you miss your shot, we're not having rebounds and running out to the perimeter and starting the possession. Miss shot. Start the next possession at the top of the key.
We're playing under Marquis of Queensberry rules here for the one-on-one tournament. We're not playing under these modern rules. I mean, is this Ben Jordan. Simmons who's hurt?
I got Jordan in a really long game with a lot of fouls.
Yeah, I see Jordan maybe trying to play the long game here and going for relying on his endurance against Ben Simmons, who hasn't played in quite a long time.
Yep. Anytime Ben's going up near the rim, it's hack down. Anytime he's fading away, back up. Mm-hmm. That's the strategy there. And then, you know, just a couple post moves here and there. Just let him. I got Jordan winning 11-9 in a game that lasts at least 90 minutes. Like,
let me
ask 11th
you,
point is just going to take forever for somebody to get off.
Let me ask you a follow-up question. Has Michael Jordan thought about this question in the past 2 months?
Oh, no, he wouldn't give us any. He wouldn't respect the thought at all. Like, Ben Simmons, of course. Like, he would be, in his mind, he's beating him 11-0, maybe. Right, probably right, giving him, like, a 5-point lead and then still winning 11-6. So, yeah, no, I don't think he's given this any thought at all.
Uh-uh. That's fair.
The magic of the play-in game, everybody, leads to one-on-one conversations that are never going to happen.
By the way, Clinton, if that's not basketball, then didn't we just – like, I don't know about you, but, like, I feel like all basketball playoff – NBA playoff conversation comes down to, hey, who can win the one-on-one matchup at the end when all the defense breaks
winning
down,
the
when all the defense gets
matchup,
difficult? Like, that's a one-on-one
winning
thing.
Winning the one-on-one matchup at the end after an entire basketball game of 5-on-5 with other people on the court is a separate matter than, do you think this guy is better than you because you've only guarded each other the entire time up and down in a driveway that may or may not have a tree hanging over so that when you shoot it from the left corner, it counts for 4 points instead of the normal three, whatever. That's what I'm saying. One-on-one basketball is for
randos. You can't add a point. You just got to avoid the corner.
Yeah, you just got to watch out for that tree.
Your house
I want to point out
weird.
The magic of the play-in game is that we spent 16 minutes talking about the Timberwolves on a Wednesday. That's incredible. That's
Didn't
the
we?
Magic of the play-in game.
Did we go? Did we go?
There was a woman who glued herself to the court.
Okay.
Who flew from California to glue herself to the court. And what was it? It was Glenn Taylor wore a t-shirt that said Glenn Taylor roasts animals alive, which I'm not going to lie, made me hungry because it sounds delicious. I mean, don't come down to South Florida on Christmas Eve because there are animals being roasted left and right down here in Miami. So, look, this play-in, we thought we were getting something when we got LeBron and Steph. No, it is just getting started. It is just getting started. The play-in is going to be the 16th hole at the Waste Management Open. That's how we should treat it for the rest of time. Just like some crazy-ish is going to happen on the floor and that's people are going to celebrate like it's 1999 when it's done. That's the new play-in setup.
I'm kind of selling this lady's story, though. I feel like there's more to it here. The whole, like, animal rights activists who glued themselves to the – and I don't mean this in any sort of nefarious or other way. I just feel like this was an attention grab that wasn't necessarily meant for the NBA audience. It might have even been personal. The energy coming off this was big. I need somebody specifically to notice me. Not that I
did
need
Did she practice gluing herself to a hardwood floor?
And I have think so it many work. Questions. I have so many questions
Go
about
ahead,
the
fire
logistics
away.
Of this scenario. Did she buy the glue in California and fly with it on a plane to Minneapolis? Like, did she
Good
test
question.
It? Good point. Was it Gorilla Glue? where do you get access to a hardwood court to even test it? Did she get kicked out of the first place she was testing? She had to go to multiple courts to test this stuff.
Does the glue company test on animals?
Of course they do. Glue is made from animals. That's why this was so ridiculous, you know?
Wow, so contradictory.
According to friend of the show, Sarah Spain, glue is made from synthetic materials, no longer made
nobody
from
uses
animals.
Glue anymore.
You're all buying right, that? Fine. You think in this country where people take shortcuts left and right to make every single thing that they
true?
Can, that the entire glue that's industry true. Has completely remodeled itself, that doesn't kill animals?
Wow, don't get, listen, don't get Big Glue after you. You're going to get us canceled.
You know what? Sometimes
are we still brought to you by Corona, or did they move on from us too?
All right, next topic, Alabaster.
All right, guys, on to our final headline of the day. Could you see Daniel Snyder finally losing the Commanders?
Oh, boy.
First on this one, because I'm from D.C.
Talk about celebratory.
And I divorced this team gloriously, and my life has been great ever since. I do. I thought this for a long time, though. And the main reason I thought this, and this is pretty easy to understand, is that he's making the league look bad, you know? And it's one thing to make the league, make yourself look bad. It's another to mess up the money with various other people along the lines. Now, double dipping is obviously the biggest of those, you know, sort of incidents in terms of crimes against whatever. But also, like, the stadium sponsorship thing was pretty ugly. Anheuser-Busch pulling out was just big brands kind of being like, actually, no, we don't want to affiliate with you. I could go on for 3 hours about the laundry list of things that Daniel M. Snyder himself has done. But, like, yeah, it's getting closer to the point where it looks like the NFL could just say, how about not to y'all? And I don't think anybody's going to be upset about that, especially not if he's taking from under their noses and lying about it.
I mean, I think it's closer. I think this is more significant to other NFL owners than anything Daniel Snyder has done before, assuming, or at least assuming it's true for now, which we're going to see. There have been reports so far that this is not really that big of a case, though. I mean, the story is that deposits from season ticket holders were basically kept instead of being sent back like they were supposed to. There were lots of hoops being put in the way for people to jump through to get those tickets deposits back. And then Daniel Snyder was keeping that money, allegedly, for himself as opposed to giving it back to the NFL as part of the revenue sharing scheme. The juiciest part of this, or the funniest part of it to me, is that one of the season ticket holders who did not get his money back was, in fact, Roger Goodell, who had season tickets for Washington before he became commissioner of the NFL. But this is not, if this is the only thing that's happening here, it's not an exorbitant amount of money. Now, I think the NFL would be upset, but I think they're more going to give him a big fine and have this move on, because I think for NFL owners, this is not just about not wanting to be associated with Daniel Snyder, but it opens up a very sort of ugly, slippery slope for NFL owners, which is now you've established that if you screw up enough, we're going to take your team away. And there are NFL owners who are doing enough sketchy stuff in their own situations, behind closed doors or off the books, perhaps. I'm not saying that I know this, but I'm saying I think that's certainly possible, that I don't think they want to have that possibility opened up. So I think if it comes to a point like Donald Sterling, where just there is so much of a force or players are boycotting, where sponsors are pulling out dramatically, that it gets to a point where there's no choice but to do this. I think that's one thing. But I think, I don't know if this brings the NFL to that point with Daniel Snyder, where they're willing to open up sort of that door for not just Daniel Snyder, but any owners in the future who also have these same sort of issues.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing, because if you were looking for, like, signs or reasons to be positive that they might take it away, and let's be honest, like, if this were a TV show, we're all cheering against Daniel Snyder. We're hoping that some, you know, that he is 100% the antagonist in the situation.
Yes.
And so if you're looking for signs, you say, okay, well, what's it going to take for them to take the team away? Is it going to take, you know, running an organization where sexual harassment is allegedly, you know, runs rampant? Is that a problem? Maybe not that much. Taking money away, not just from the other owners, allegedly, but then from your own, you know, season ticket base. And that's who has to get, like, the two groups of people who have to be in an uproar are the fellow owners and the fan base. You know, they have to be loud enough to make some noise, especially locally, especially within, you know, the area that supposed to wants to cheer for that team. And so I think, you know, reportedly keeping $5 million, upwards of $5 million in deposits from season ticket holders is, I think, enough to finally get them angry enough to say, oh, on top of everything else, you've taken money out of our pockets. And you know, same thing with the owners, if that's the case. If they don't have as many sort of skeletons in their closet, they can sort of speak up and say, hey, that's sort of the baseline, that's sort of the one tying point of our relationship here, is we don't lie to each other about money, maybe. And so yeah, I think if that's what you're looking for, it feels like maybe this is closer to a possibility of them taking away the team. But it's like Bill said here, it's got to be something pretty egregious for them to just make it a clear and obvious decision.
Just another day in Ashburnistan, as I once again, place is a mess. I mean, what are we talking about here? You know, it's ridiculous. I'm not saying that in terms of we shouldn't be talking about this. It's just, it is truly remarkable every day. 0 days since last absurd headline in Ashburnistan. And that's been going on.
There's just so many fires to put out around the world right now. I feel like people are exhausted. They're just exhausted. And like, you could be watching one right in front of you and be like, man, that's bad. Okay, what else do I have to do today? You know, it's just, it's a lot. It's a lot.
Right.
And frankly, that's what I feel like some of these people in power are banking on.
I mean, let me ask you, if it's not this, if this is not enough, if this is true for the NFL to have their executive committee vote to remove Daniel Snyder from ownership, what would it take?
I don't know.
I mean a video of some sort. Like, it'd have to be visual evidence, video evidence of something horrible. Like, that's probably it.
Right. Or some sort of like actual meltdown that was a physical confrontation, you know, or something like that. I mean, something that was clearly just out of pocket. But I mean, I do think there's something to be said for the notion of, you know, the NFL, I don't know, man, there's a lot of scumbag dudes that run a lot of sports teams. And then there's Dan Snyder. Like, you're not going to lose any public opinion PR battle if you oust this guy. That's the one thing that the NFL has, that people might actually side with the other owners in the league, something that rarely happens in terms of the average fan's connection to what that level of the game is. You know what I mean? And so they actually might have a chance here to be like, hey, look, we're the good guys on some level because we got rid of this guy and we don't need him anymore.
I wonder if Daniel Snyder and the like, you know, will watch a show like Winning Time and say, see, like, we all do some shady stuff. Like, if there wasn't a big smile and a bunch of trophies after that, like, we all able to look back and be like, man, that guy really tried to piece together the Lakers that way. That was embarrassing, you know. But now it's a success story. And so I'm sure a lot of them, just like everybody does, some level of shady stuff. But like over and over and over again, like, it's just it's over the top.
It's really incredible. I mean, I wonder from Daniel Snyder's perspective. Like, he is, as Clinton alluded to, universally hated here in D.C. Like, have you ever met someone who was like, oh, actually, you know, I think Daniel Snyder gets kind of a bad rap. He's a good guy. Nobody likes Daniel Snyder. He is in the
public
eye.
In a world where there's both sides for everything, you're right. Right. I have not heard the other side
of the
argument for Daniel
Snyder.
He's like the most, like, significant heel in sports. And at this point, like, I wonder, like, what is Daniel Snyder doing this for? What is he getting out of this? His team isn't winning. They're having to complain.
He has glued his wrists to the stadium grass. He's never leaving.
But so, like, that, like, I mean, just, I think that's the big question with that is, like, right, which is the environment that he's in. And, you know, it's wild, too, because I just feel like I was sort of speculating on this, you know, like a couple of weeks ago about, like, if I was an owner of a team and I wanted to put a football team somewhere else, like, I'd consider buying that team and just moving it because the stadium is a wreck. You're arguing with people all over the place and, like, the history is not one you could celebrate. And people were like, I can't believe that you would say something like that. Why would they leave? And, like, the NFL's got to really decide, like, is the fan base in D.C., you know, big city, obviously the capital of the United States of America, a lot of money, like, is it worth this headache of this guy constantly popping up who does not win? You see what I'm saying? This is not some situation
That's
where you're covering up championships. These are not good teams. They're out there bungling the, you know, homegoing services at the stadium, so to speak, of the best players in their history. I'm talking about Sean Taylor. Like, nothing good comes out of this. So there's a world in which you could just say, listen, this is what we cannot have. The market is more important than the team in some ways. And I don't know, man. I don't think this is going to end well for the fans or for Dan Snyder. It just does not seem like something that – it's not a good fit right now, the NFL in that town and that guy.
I mean, they literally dump sewage on their fans multiple times last season during home games. And it, like, wasn't even a big deal. It's like, oh, that's, like, the ninth worst thing they did to their fans last year. That is how decrepit this organization has become.
They hired a new social media manager.
Just raining poop at a WFT game, and nobody's talking about it.
Heat would never do that. The Heat would never dump poo on
their No.
Never that.
No.
Pristine sanitation for the Heat.
All right.
What do we got next?
Hands-free flushing.
I would like to point out that
Pablo Torre bit.
If the Heat were losing and it was the fourth quarter, you could dump sewage on the fans because none of them would be there. They would have all left.
Unfortunately, you're never going to get a chance to prove that because they're not going to be trailing in the fourth. At home, anyway.
We'll see. All right, we're going to move on next to a couple if-thens. And
I just want to know what's going to happen this year if the Heat even get to the finals. Like, you guys are just going to have me on every single day, and I'm just going to sit back with my feet up and just be like, what do you guys have to say now? And I don't even want to be that guy. Like, I remember watching Mike Wilbon cheer for Chicago back in the day. I'm like, I thought we're journalists. We're not supposed to do that. I've fought this for so long. But if, and I'm not even cheering for it, if they make it, I am 100% going to be for 2 weeks straight going to be on this show. I'm gonna be in the fourth box like Waz was the other day. I know people can still hear me. I don't really care. And again, not cheering for it, but if it happens, wow, the revenge tour that will take place.
The wingspan, so impressive.
I'm going to take his. It's going to be unbelievable.
Are we seriously ending the show?
That's great. I'm all for that. I understand.
I mean, I'm still here. They want to get rid of me. We should watch, check for the referees, see how, like, shady the refereeing is in these games with the Miami Heat. Clearly, nobody wants them to win. I know John Cena over
out
here, but
you
can still hear me.
Get Betty's out. The game is over. If he's jumping on a table bragging about the Heat.